Ready.
I had to get my thing.
In the end of Sefer Yecheskel, the Navi Yecheskel writes in the end of his Nebuas that La'asid Lavai, Yerushalayim will have a big wall around it for the purpose of security, for protection. And there will be 13 gates to enter Yerushalayim. And each gate will have the name of the Shevet, Shah Ruven, Shah Shimon, Shah Levi, Shah Yehud, and so on. And then the 13th gate will be the Shah HaKoilah. So what is this all about? So the Magen Avraham and Hilchas Tefillah quotes from the Arizal that a gate to enter Yerushalayim is a way, means a way to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we have a concept in halacha, sometimes doesn't always apply, that very often when you have a dispute in halacha, the both ways are correct. Halacha lamaisa, each one should follow his rebbe. The Beis Shammai were working with the Midrash HaTorah and Reshus Pem, and the Beis Hillel were working with the Midrash HaTorah and the Reshus Pem. So the Talmid Beis Shammai are obligated to follow their rebbe shita. The Talmid Beis Hillel are obligated to follow their rebbe shita. So just like Yitzchak Avinu requested from Esav to make him a delicious meal, and he said, "Aseli matamim, make me different courses in the meal." Why do you need different courses? Well, if you're hungry, eat another piece of meat. You're still hungry, eat a third piece of meat. What do you need all the different? Well, the answer is, human beings enjoy variety. So just like human beings enjoy variety, that's what Yitzchak asked, "Aseli matamim." Make a delicious meal with different courses in the meal. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciates variety. And he wanted, the plan was to have Yud Beis Shvatim. And every Shevet is going to have its own Sanhedrin. That's the halacha. The Mishnah has like that in Hoirius. Every Shevet has its own Sanhedrin. And every Shevet is supposed to follow the Psak of their Sanhedrin. The only time you have to follow the Psak, the only time you go to ask a Psak of the Bez Nagonel, that it should be binding on all of Klal Yisrael, is that you have a machlekes that's causing friction in the community. Dibrei Ribus b'sharecha. But if it's not causing friction, and the Beis Medrash of B'Shamay, the Fala B'Shamay Shita. Beis Medrash of B'Shillah, the Fala B'Shillah Shita. The Gemara says in the days of the Tanaim, in different communities, they follow different Shitas. Whatever. If all the Shitas were based on Midah Shatar and Yidreshah's plan, then we apply the rule of Eilu B'Eilu Dibri Likim Chayim. So that's what it means, that Lossi Lover, that's what the Magen Avraham quotes from the Arizal, that Lossi Lover, there'll be 13 different gates entering Yerushalayim. Everyone who knows what Shevet he belongs to should approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu with that derech. Whoever is a ger or a bal tshuva or he doesn't know what Shevet he belongs to, they should go through the miscellaneous Shevet, the Shar HaKvelo, that's acceptable for everybody. So then the Arizal adds on that just like there are different approaches in Psak HaLacha, Eil V'Yil Adiv V'Kim Chayim, so through the different Nuschos HaTfilah. So he says the 13 different Nuschos HaTfilah, the 12 different Nuschos correspond to the 12 Shvatim. So whoever knows what Shevet he belongs to should daven the Nusach of his Shevet. And then the punchline, the Magen Avraham doesn't quote, the punchline of the Arizal is the Nusach Ari in davening is the Shara Kevel. That's acceptable for everybody. So that's why the list, Lubavitcher Rebbe has a tshuva where he writes Lahalacha, that even though you're not supposed to switch the Nusach and the Shul, whatever the Nusach HaTfilah is, everybody's supposed to daven that Nusach. But Nusach HaRi, you can always daven. Even though the Shul is not Nusach HaRi. Someone was pointing out that usually when Chabad takes over a community, they take over a Shul, they change the Nusach. So that's based on the Psak of their Rebbe, even though you're not allowed to change the Nusach. But the Rebbe held, based on a Chassam Sefer, that you can always switch to Nusach HaRi. That's called the Shara Kolo. There was a big Lubavitcher Talmud Chacham in Europe, was famous for the Sefer that he wrote on Hilchos Gittin, it's called the Kavanoki. All the Rabbonim all over the world, when they do a get, they use the Kavanoki. He gives you step by step how to do a get, and how to do a get Da'idei Shliach, and the Mitzvah Shliach Sheni, and so on. So the same author wrote another Sefer that's called Shar HaKoilo, a very thin Sefer, about 50 pages, but it's printed separately. Shar HaKoilo is a biur, is an elaboration on the Nusach HaTfilah of the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, which is basically Nusach HaRi. here and there he has some shinui, but basically it's Nusach Arizal. The reason why he calls it Shara Kailom is based on this punchline of the Arizal, that there are 12 different scholars at Tvila, and the Nusach that's good for everybody, even if you belong to a different Shevet, is supposed to be, that's what the Ari thought, that it's the Nusach Ari. So that's why upstairs we follow the din, that if the minig amochim is that you daven a certain nusach, so the guests shouldn't be mishan the nusach, so we daven nusach ari. The question is, what right did they have in the first place to introduce nusach ari if for 100 years they didn't daven nusach ari? So they are relying on their Rebbe, the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, who wrote this psak based on a Chuvas Chasam Sefer. Enjoy your meal.
We just heard about the Ginsburg family. That there were three generations in a row where they were amassing Svarim, Hebrew Svarim, and Kisrayad manuscripts. That sometimes that was the only copy that was available in the whole wide world. And in the early 1900s, I think the government took over, I don't remember exactly why, the government took over the whole a library of Baron David Ginsburg, and it was part of the National Russian Library in Moscow. And then in 1907, a group of Jews were interested in buying it from the National Library, and they clinched the deal after much negotiation. They clinched the deal, they gave the money. The money to buy the manuscripts in the whole library, all the books, came from Zionist funds. The money was dedicated to Zionist causes, they used it. And then, with the whole revolution, and they never got the Svarim. So, in the last few years, the Israeli government negotiated with the Russian government that they're not going to ask for all of the books and all the Svarim. The government has a right to it. There was a Muhammad, like all the books that were left behind in Europe after the Holocaust. It's that's called Avudim Imenu Mikol Adam, that whoever finds it later on has the right to keep it. So the national government will keep it, the National Library in Moscow will keep all the Svarim. But they agreed, they made an agreement that they're going to make everything available online, a copy of all the manuscripts. There's thousands, several thousand. I think 2,000 manuscripts that nobody else has any copy of these at all. These are extremely valuable. So they already put out a few Svarim. This fellow, Abraham Shoshana, he's a Svardi from Telza Yeshiva in Cleveland. He already put out a few Svarim. I think this, I don't understand why. He has the exclusive of putting out all these Kisvei Yad. I don't think it makes sense. They should really have hundreds of people working on the manuscript. Why only one person with his team? But he somehow got the exclusive, and he already put out the Mesillas Yesharim by Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, the original version of Mesillas Yesharim. That was a conversation between two different people. Instead of the way we have the Mesillas Yesharim, that it's a bunch of essays, series of essays, the original version was that it's a conversation. So he printed that. Then he printed also the Rabbi Natam's Sefer Al HaTorah. Most of it is a Likut of Midrashim, old Midrashim, which we have already. But some of them are taka interesting. We don't have any other source for those Midrashim. So this is going to be extremely valuable when this will be completed. The world of Jewish books will be enriched with all of these new manuscripts that will be printed. There was one big Talmud Chacham who lived in Moscow, whom we didn't speak about. They just had an article about him in a recent Mishpacha magazine. Much of what they wrote was known already from years ago. His name was Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Kasilichovitz or something like that. Some complicated name. And when he was younger, he learned in Miri Yeshiva. And then later he got smicha, apparently, went into Rabbanus. For a while he was a rabbi in Poltava, so he was known as the Poltava Goen. and then he gave up the Rabbanus. He was under the communists. He gave it up because life was so miserable. They were giving all the rabbis a hard time. And he became a bookkeeper for a company in Moscow. And he used to work extra hours in the middle of the week so he wouldn't have to work on Shabbos. He was always a Shem Shabbos, and he was a big Tamachov. So he decided he wants to write a commentary on Yerushalmi. So he wrote the whole commentary, I think, on Yerushalmi Zroi. I don't know if he wrote on everything. I think he wrote on Yerushalmi Zroi. And then he was very concerned. He was very afraid if the KGB is going to discover that he has this commentary, they'll kill him. They'll put him in and send him to Siberia. He won't survive. So he destroyed the whole copy of the whole manuscript. And then later he had charata why he destroyed it. So he rewrote the commentary again. In addition to his commentary, I think he started one masechta at a time. He didn't have all of Shas, Talmud Bavli. He didn't have all the Svarim in his home. But he wrote a lot from memory. So he started, I think, in the Shnas HaShmita, he started writing on Yerushalmi HaShvitz. And he wrote, he hopes that he wishes he could go to Eretz Israel. It was impossible. The communists wouldn't let anybody leave to Eretz Israel. He wishes he could go to Eretz Yisrael, fulfill the mitzvah of Shemitah. He's not able to. So the learning of Yerushalmi should be considered as if he fulfilled the commentary that he's writing on the laws of Shemitah, should be considered as if he fulfilled the mitzvah of Shemitah. The Gemara has such a concept with respect to Korbanos. But this Ban She'en Beis HaMikdash Kayam, the Gemara tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Avram Avinu ownership of Eretz Yisrael. So Avram Avinu asked, "Bama Eda Ki Roshenu? What schus will my descendants have the right to maintain Eretz Yisrael?" So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, "Koli Eglu Mushalash and Baim Mushulosh Yisrael B'Goizol." That means the schus HaKrobos HaKarbonis. So then the Gemara adds on to the conversation. This part does already not appear in Chumash at all. At least the first part appears a little bit in Chumash. So the next part only appears in the Gemara, the end of Maseches Megillah. So Avraham Avinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is good Bizman Shem Beis HaMikdash HaYikayam, but in 1948 there's no Beis HaMikdash, so what right will my descendants have to be entitled to Balabatava over Eretz Yisrael? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells them, let them recite Parshas HaKarbonis, Mal Ani Aleihem, I will consider it Kilu Hikrivu HaKarbonis. So Rashi writes in Bab Metzia and Daftei or so that this is only with respect to Korbanos. Doesn't apply with respect to other mitzvahs. Let's say someone is in Siberia and he doesn't have matzah. Or a person doesn't have a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. He doesn't have dalad minim on Sukkot. So he's going to learn the din and it'll be considered as if he fulfilled the mitzvah. So the Chafetz Chaim has a long essay in the Hakdamah to his, he published a sefer, a collection of commentaries, Seder Kochim. So the Chafetz Chaim has a long essay, and he quotes the Rashi in Bav Metzia. He quotes other Rishonim that this Avtocha, that if we will learn Zos Torah Sa'ilo, Kol Ha'isik, but Torah Sa'ilo, Ki Lehi Kri Vailo, one who learns the Dinam of Karbonis will get the reward Ki Lehi offered the Karbonis. That's only with respect to Karbonis and with respect to Binyan Beis HaMikdash. There's a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. So if you learn Mishnayis Midas, you learn the Pesukim in the end of Yechezkel about the Midas of the Bais HaShlishi, so then you get reward as if you built the Beis HaMikdash, as if you brought Karbonos. But it doesn't apply with respect to other mitzvahs. But not everybody agrees to that. That's what the Chofetz Chaim writes. The Mabit, who was a contemporary of Rabbi Yosef Karo, who was in the Bezin of the Beis Yosef, Tzfat and the 59, they were together. So he wrote a whole sefer called Beis Avakim. So he writes in his sefer that comment that the Ribbono Shel Olam made to Avraham Avinu, that if we'll learn the laws of Korbanos, Kavish Baruch Hu will consider it as if we brought the Korbanos, applies to any mitzvah that you're unable to fulfill. If you're honest for whatever reason, a person is sick and he can't go to shul and he can't hear Kriyas HaTorah, so let him learn Hilchas Kriyas HaTorah, and Kavish Baruch Hu will consider it as if he fulfilled the mitzvah Kriyas HaTorah. That applies to all mitzvahs. And that's what this Paltova Goyen writes in the Hakdamah to the first volume that he wrote on Shviyas, Yerushalmi Shviyas. this year is the Shnas HaShemitah, and he wishes he could live in Eretz Yisrael and observe the mitzvah. He lives under the communists, they won't let him emigrate to Eretz Yisrael. So his writing of the commentary should be considered min HaShemayim, see if he fulfilled the mitzvah HaShemitah. But then he wrote a commentary on all of Yerushalmi's Roim. And it's not just the commentary line by line explaining what is the argument back and forth. He always gives you an introduction to the whole sugya. He writes a whole essay. He explains what the whole topic is all about. And he wrote this at a time he didn't know how in the world he's going to give this over to someone else, that someone should print it. So years ago, many of us remember that there were different organizations that were tumbling in order that to pressure the Russian government to let the Jewish people go free. So one of the, there was SSSJ, Students Struggle for Soviet Jewry. They used to make demonstrations, and other people made demonstrations. So one of the organizations was called Altidom. I don't know how many people were involved in the organization. There was a Rabbi Noach Bronstein, I think his name was. He used to travel to Russia a lot. He used to bring tefillin, mezuzahs, and so on, talis and svarim. And he used to be an activist. So on one of his visits to Russia, the chief rabbi of Moscow was Rabbi Yehuda Leib Levin. He spoke about a little bit. He's the one who visited America the year after Mohammed Sheshet Hayamim. And he visited YU, I remember, when he came to the yeshiva. We spoke about him a little bit. So this Rabbi Levin was speaking to this Rabbi Noach Bronstein. So he said, this goyim, this Poltavik goyim is in the hospital, he's not well, let's go be mevakachad. So he took him to the hospital. So the goyim was on his deathbed. The end of the story was he died the next day on his deathbed. So he said that years before, I think 40 years before, he had published a sefer on the Rambam, that's called Tvuna. And he wanted, that was printed, I think they write that was the last sefer that was printed under the communists, and then they didn't allow publication of any Hebrew sort for many years. So he had a chelak sheni, another chelak of the sefer on the Rambam, and he took the manuscript with him to the hospital, and he had it under his pillow. So he wanted to give it to this Rabbi Bronstein from America. So he asked him, will you shake hands and give me a tekiyas kav, promise me that you will publish it? So he said, how can I promise? I don't know. I'll try. I'll try to get it out of Russia. They may not let me take it out of the country. I'll try. Do the best that he can. So he promised that he will. Then he said he has a whole... So he had the manuscript for the second sefer under the pillow in the hospital. But he was afraid under the communists and then the KGB, every other person was a muster, was watching what people are doing. Mastering to the government who's doing religious activities. So he was afraid that the nurses would see that he's giving over the manuscript. They would see something strange going on. So he said, there's a thermometer under the pillow. Bend over, take the manuscript, and pick up the thermometer. So they'll see that you pick up the thermometer, so they won't notice that you're picking up the manuscript for the sefer. So he did that. He was so concerned that they're going to master that he has a sefer. So the Bronstein took the manuscript for the sefer and put it in between his sock and his leg, and he took it home out of the hospital. And then this goyim, this Krasiva Chavez, whatever his name was, so he told him that he has a whole chibur on Yerushalmi and Zeroyim at the home of his daughters. He had two daughters who lived in Russia. I think one lived in Moscow. They were both married. One lived in Moscow. One lived in Leningrad. So Bronstein first tried to take the manuscript out. So it's a whole long, fascinating story. He made a microfilm and he gave it to the American embassy, and they convinced the American diplomats that this is very important for the Jewish people, and they should send it by diplomatic mail so the communists won't check it, won't start up with it. So they had they made a microfilm copy of the manuscript, and it was sitting in the American embassy overnight till they were going to send it by diplomatic mail. punt that night there was a sreifa, and the microfilm copy was destroyed. So they had to make another copy of it. And then he had to convince the daughters that they should. This Bronstein went back and forth many, many times. He went from America to Moscow to visit very often to bring Tashmishi Kedusha. So it took him quite a while till he convinced the two daughters that one daughter gave, the other daughter didn't want to give. So finally, the both daughters agreed finally to give the manuscript, and he succeeded in sending it through diplomatic mail to America. And then they had to have somebody go over the commentary to prepare it for publication. So the world's biggest expert on Yerushalmis happened to be Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So he worked on it for many years, over 25 years he worked on it. And they have many volumes. They have, I think, 20 volumes. Every Masechtim in Zroim has one or two volumes. Not everything is finished. Not one Masechta is finished in one volume. They have big, fat volumes. They have a link with all of the Farshim Ad Yerushalmi with the Toldos Yitzchak by this Goyim. So they write that they have... So this, much of this story was known from years ago. But the reason why they just reprinted it now is because Rabbi Yankov Pollack, who was a rabbi in Shomrei Emunah, just passed away a month ago. So it was the shloshim of this Rabbi Pollack. So during his lifetime, he never publicized the fact that he was involved in saving these manuscripts. And after he passed away, his son told the public. His son was interviewed. They wrote up the whole story that Rabbi Bronstein wasn't allowed back into Russia because the KGB caught him that he's giving Tashmishi Kedusha. So he's to send Rabbi Pollack. So Rabbi Pollack and Mrs. Pollack were the ones who saved all these manuscripts and saw to it that they were printed.
Okay, we're going to hear the second half of the Devar Torah from Rabbi Schechter.
No, Devar Torah, just a little history.
History is also good.
Okay. Before I left New York, Rabbi J.J. Schechter, who was the son of Rabbi Herschel Schechter, Zichron Livracha, told me that when his father visited Moscow in the 1960s, I think, they had just, Rabbi Schleifer passed away then in the 1960s, had just, he came with, Rabbi Herschel Schechter came with a group of whole delegation of rabbis, and Rabbi Schleifer, who was still alive at that time, gave them a copy of the Siddur HaShalom. We know that in America we have a Siddur that's called Siddur HaShalem, Shacharis, Mincha, Maariv, and Yom Tov, and Shabbos, and Hallel for Rosh Chodesh, has everything. But this was called a Siddur HaShalom, and in the Siddur, the assumption is that the USSR, somehow in Hebrew, this was, I don't know what it stands for, Samach, 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 Reish. I don't know what the Samach, Samach, Samach stands for. So they have a special tefillah of the Shlom HaMedina where they ask that the Samach, 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 Reish, which is the wonderful government that's responsible for seeing to it that there's peace all over the world. So the Russian government sponsored the publication of this Siddur HaShalom to bring peace to the whole world. So Rabbi J.J. Schechter pointed out to me, Rabbi, and the rabbi here in Moscow also pointed out to me, that the Siddur HaShalom in Al Anisim, Al Apurk, Al Gurus, Al Shrus, Al Melchamas, the word, two words, Al Melchamas, are missing. By Shachris and Mincha and Ma'ariv, they forgot to take it, so the whole davening is there, it's offset, and you just have an empty space where these two words are missing. Al Melchamas, because it's supposed to be the Siddur HaShalom, that the USSR is responsible for bringing peace into the whole world. So Rabbi Herschel Schechter, Zichron Livracha, mistakenly thought that they only printed 10 copies of this Siddur, and they gave the 5 or 6 rabbis copies of the Siddur. He does know what they did with the other 4 copies that they printed. The rabbi we had in Moscow, what was his name? Rabbi Goldberg.
Goldschmidt?
Rabbi Goldschmidt told me, no, the government printed thousands of copies of the Siddur. That's what they used for years, that Siddur HaShalom. And he said that this was the whole idea of printing, Rabbi Goldschmidt explained, the whole idea of printing the Siddur is to to get all the Jewish organizations all over the world to convince the American government that the USSR is very interested in peace. And this was in the middle of the arms race. So the USSR said that we should cut back on making more weapons. Clandestinely, they're making more weapons. Mm-hmm. But they wanted the Jewish organizations to convince the American government that everybody should cut back on making weapons and they'll be ahead of everybody else.
Right.
So that's why part of that scheme was that they put out the Siddur HaShalom for the Jewish people. They made thousands of copies. Rabbi Goldschmidt said that for years they were using it in the middle of the meal when mm-hmm. we ate in the shul on Shabbos. So he brought in a copy of the Siddur HaShalom. We looked a little further, so the Magia forgot to take out the two words Allah Muhammad by Mincha by Shabbos. They slipped up to have the two words. Yeah, the issue with Tzeisa Kechavim, see, we assume that there's sunrise and sunset, and then in between sunset and Laila, there's an in-between period that we call twilight, and that's considered, the Mishnah is considered that a Safik Yom, Safik Laila. Until you have Tzeis HaKochavim. What do you mean Tzeis HaKochavim? What size Kochavim do you have to be able to see? So the Gemara says you have to be able to see three Kochavim Beinonim. There are large Kochavim that can be noticed even in the daytime. Then there are smaller Kochavim that has to be very dark outside to be able to see. Then there are Kochavim Beinonim, intermediate size Kochavim. When you can see three Kochavim Beinonim, then it's considered Laila. See, here the problem is that this season of the year, you have the white nights here, that all night long, it doesn't really get dark. So that's a question, how late after the sunset is the Tzeis HaKochavim? So some commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, namely the Prit Megadim and several others, assume that all year long it's the same amount of time. Some say 72 minutes after sunset, summer, winter, spring, or fall, it's always 72 minutes after. And others say it's always 25 minutes after the sunset, summer, winter. So they didn't realize until, I think, the late 1700s or something like that, that it really depends what season of the year you're talking about and what part of the globe you're talking about. Tzeis HaKochavim, the ability to see three stars that are intermediate size, depends. It doesn't depend on how many minutes after the sunset you're dealing with. It depends on what degree angle the sun is below the horizon. So in different parts of the globe, it's going to be a different amount of time. It's not going to be the same amount of time all over. So here, so that's a question. What degree angle do you have to have the sun should be below the horizon that it should be Tzeis HaKochavim? So according to the way we usually assume, then this season of the year there is no Tzeis HaKochavim at all. If you assume there is no Tzeis HaKochavim, so when is Shabbos over? So all night long is Bein HaShemash, is still the morning. So that's what they quote from the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Baal HaTanya had a lot of Hasidim in this part of Russia. So he writes in his Siddur in the Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't write like this, but in the Shulchan Aruch he wrote for everybody, and the Siddur he wrote for the Hasidim. So in the Siddur of the Baal HaTanya, he writes that Tzeis HaKochavim depends what season of the year, what part of the globe you're in. And he writes, and if you're so far north that it's going to be Bein HaShemashes all night long till sunrise, then we assume that midnight is the cutoff point. That at Chatzos HaLaila, that's the end of Bein HaShemashes of yesterday. That's the beginning of Alos HaShachar for tomorrow. So that's the Vilna Gaon also writes the same. I think it's in Hilchos Pesach, the Bir Agro. The Vilna Gaon has his long dissertation on the Zmanim in Hilchos Shabbos by Hadlokas Haneris. But this point that it depends on midnight when there is no Tzeis HaKochavim, this I think he has in Hilchos Pesach. So they both say the same thing. So that's why if you should assume the way we usually do, that it's only Laila, it's only Vaday Laila, when the sun reaches a certain degree below the horizon, all year long, we always assume a certain shear. So, you you're never going to have that shiur over here. So that's why. So it's not going to help if you're going to wait to daven Ma'ariv. You want to say Kriyash Ma'ariv to Tzeisel Kochavim. If you wait till after midnight, then it'll be already Alos HaShachar for tomorrow. So the Gemara in Brachas does say, if a person didn't daven Ma'ariv yet, didn't say Kriyash Ma'ariv with the Brachas yet, so it's a big Shas HaTchak, then we are lenient. We permit you to say Kriyash Ma'ariv even after Alos HaShachar, before Hanetzachama, before sunrise. But rather than rely on that big Shas HaTchak, we're not going to daven Ma'ariv after Alos HaShachar. We're going to daven Ma'ariv on the assumption that the first Tosfos in Brachos says. We're going to follow Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda says you can daven Mincha up until Plag HaMincha, and after Plag HaMincha you can already daven Ma'ariv. And Tosfos assumes, the first Tosfos in Brachos assumes, that just like you can daven Ma'ariv, you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyas Shema as well. Not everybody agrees with the Tosfos, others disagree. The Rosh disagrees and says no. The Gemara just says, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can daven Shema Nesri at Ma'ariv. It never says you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyas Shema. But here we have no choice. We have a Shas HaTchak. You got to wait till Tzeis Kochavim. You wait all night long. There is no Tzeis Kochavim. You're not going to gain anything by waiting till after Chatzos. That's already after Alos HaShachar. So you're not supposed to wait till after Alos HaShachar. So we have no choice. Look, the Torah says you have to recite Kriyas Shema B'shoch B'chol when normal people are going to sleep. So over here, normal people are going to sleep. This season of the year, you can't say no one's going to sleep because it's not Tzeis Kochavim. People are going to sleep 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. You have to assume that within some reasonable time. So we'll, even though it's not yet Rosh Chodesh, but since the Ma'ariv tonight that we're going to say before the sun sets, sun doesn't set till 10:21 or something like that. But still, we're going to have Ma'ariv before 10:21, and we'll say Yalla V'Yovei. Shaila is, we have 2 days Rosh Chodesh, you have Wednesday and Thursday. So Thursday night, we're probably also going to daven Ma'ariv before the sun sets, probably.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So that's a question. Just like tonight, the Ma'ariv is offered for Rosh Chodesh, so too, the Ma'ariv on Thursday night is offered for Friday, so Friday is not Rosh Chodesh. So the Mishnah Berurah says you don't say Yalla V'Yovei. And others question that. Why not? It's still Rosh Chodesh. You got to daven Ma'ariv on Thursday evening before the Shkia. So true, tonight we're going to say Yalla V'Yovei because we're davening tonight is Rosh Chodesh. But on Thursday evening, I'm going to daven before the Shkia. Others disagree with the Mishnah Berurah. They hold that you should say Yalla V'Yovei. So that's really, I think that was. If you leave out Yalla V'Yovei by Mincha, the din is you have to repeat the Shema Nesrei. If you're supposed to say here, leaving out Yalla V'Yovei by Ma'ariv of Thursday night, so then by Ma'ariv you don't have to repeat Yalla V'Yovei. So I would think maybe L'Chatchila we ought to say Yalla V'Yovei, not like the Mishnah.
Wait till after 10:22.
So hopefully,
okay,
we'll see.
We'll be able to get a minyan to daven so late. That would be great. And people speak about St. Petersburg, this famous city. So the big Talmud Chacham who comes to mind is always Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer. It was known as Rabbi Tzala Peterburger. He was the rabbi in St. Petersburg for 16 years. Rabbi Saul Salanta was the founder of the famous individual, the founder of the Muslim movement. So he had many students, different communities in Europe, but the three most outstanding students, the most outstanding follower of Rabbi Saul Salanta was Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer. I don't know why, but when I was a little boy, the pushkas that used to collect money for the Aniyim and Eretz Yisrael used to have the picture of Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer on them. At the end of his life, he lived in Yerushalayim, but I don't know why the pushkas always had his picture. He was the most prominent student. He was the biggest Talmid Chacham among the students of Rabbi Saul Salanta. In fact, people complained to Rabbi Saul Salanta, why did he bug him with this Musa shtick? If he would have left him alone and he wouldn't get him involved in the Musa, he would have become even a greater Goyen than he was. So Rabbi Saul Salanta responded that there's a din in the Gemara, and it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, if you're beginning a meal, you want to start with hamotzi, so you have a small roll, which is a shlema, you have a gigantic challah, but the challah is a prusa. You cut off part of the challah. So which is it preferable to say hamotzi over? If you have a small challah and a big challah, so it's preferable to say hamotzi on the larger one. If you have a shlema and a non-shlema, so it's preferable to say hamotzi on the shlema. This is all we call. What if you have a conflict? On the one hand, one challah is a shlema, but it's tiny, a tiny little roll. And on the other hand, the other challah is gigantic, but it's a prusa. So the din is that the shlema is more chashuv than the gedola, that's the prusa. But they say that Rabbi Sol Salanta said, you see by human beings also that shlemos is more important than godless. If he would have not bugged Rabbitza Leteta Burger with the Musa shtick, it would have become a bigger gadol, so that would represent godless. And now that he got him involved in Musa, so that's completed his shlemos. He said, you see from the Gemara by Hamotzi on the Pas Shlema, which is a smaller one, as opposed to reciting Hamotzi on the Prusa, which is Gedola, you see that Shlemos is more important than Godless. Anyway, this is Rabbi Yitzchok Laza. He was the most outstanding, most learned Talmud Rabbi Sol Salanter, and the one who publicized the Shitas HaMusar. We don't have too much written by Rabbi Sol Salanter. The one who wrote up the whole project of learning Musar and so on was Rabbi Yitzchok Laza. He was the one who publicized the Shitas HaMusar of his Rebbe. The other two outstanding Talmidim of Rabbi Sol Salanter were Reb Simcha Zisel Ziv, that was the family name, and he was the one who founded the yeshiva in Kelim. It was a chiddush. It was the first high school under auspices of Rabbanim that had secular education. And Rabbi Sol Salanter is the one who encouraged him to start that high school, because many parents will not want to send their children to a high school that's not going to have secular education. And they say that they asked Rabbi Sol Salanter asked Rabbi Simcha Zisel, he was preparing for a year recruiting students for this high school in Kelim, Talmud Torah in Kelim. And at the end of the year, before they actually opened up the high school, so Rabbi Sol Salanter asked Rabbi Simcha Zisel, can you foresee any problems? So he responded, yes, if they're not going to be careful, it may turn out to be an Egel HaZohav, that we're having secular education together, mixing it together with Torah. So they say that Rabbi Sol Salanter said, it's a good thing that you responded like that. If you would have said, I can't foresee any sakonis at all, I would have told you to scrap the whole project. But now that you realize that there is a risk, you are running a risk in running such a school. Now I rely on you. Now that you realize there's an issue, I rely on you that you're going to see to it that everything is going to be fine.
I know it's from people in the East.